Thanks a lot. Now I would like to, Elliot, you can stay on the stage. You have.
Are we all up?
Yes, all welcome. No, yeah, the panelists, Charlotte Tausi and Göran, because now we open up for a common interaction. While you are stepping up on the stage, I would like to pick on something that I think you, Charlotte, brought up, and that is what today is, should we call, aid or external financial provision community. It's changing quite dramatically. You mentioned China. Of course, we have China. We have new actors like the Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank, the BRICS Bank, new actors, the private sector, civil society. Is it at all possible to harmonize all those actors together, and what can we do to that on that? So my question before I invite you is, maybe we have reached peak aid. Aid might be dwindling in the years to come, but have we also reached a peak when it comes to running an aid effectiveness agenda, as we are only part of a broader picture? Some reflections on that, while I ask you to come on with some questions.
Yeah, I think it is a trade-off. If we really want many actors to engage, and we are talking about remittances. People are discussing remittances, whether they should be just individual to individual or used as funds. We are talking about other actors in many different ways, philanthropy, blah, blah, blah. So I guess if we then say, well, we need to harmonize, but we have some long-standing actors and some newcomers, it is, in reality, I think, difficult. I'm not sure that try to govern is the solution, but perhaps demonstrating, you know, the good we get out of partnerships. Partnerships is not necessarily, in my world, working closely together with money flows between. Partnerships can be, you know, a platform where somebody in a country context just invites others. Not necessarily a bureaucracy, but a dialogue platform, which I think is a possible way, but I think it's very tough to talk about harmonization as a hard form principle without excluding other actors.
And the reflection on this, Göran?
No, not necessarily.
Tausi? Elliot? Okay, we have a new chair. Yes. So, Arne, please. There is a mic somewhere in my pocket. Yes, yeah.
Okay, well, one dramatic thing that is happening in the world is, of course, this Brexit, Trump, Jimmy Åkesson, etc., where, well, they're sort of also thinking about ownership, I guess. They want to isolate and link up much less with the rest of the world or have trade controls, etc. But if you look back the last three or four decades or so, there's been an enormous decrease in poverty, particularly in Asia, due to the fact that people have been integrated into the global markets. Globalization has been there. Now it seems to be the case that the guys who are really poor, that those guys who have not been globalized, they are sort of left out. And there is a concern, I think, that in Africa, the competition that you can, the cheap labor maybe is not such a competitive force anymore that it used to be. Automation is getting cheaper, they can do it in different ways. So the question is, if we now have a situation where the old mechanisms don't work as well as before, maybe, and where some people in the north are trying to isolate themselves and don't want to open up to much migration, for example, or all kinds of global issues, what would then be the role of aid to sort of bring in the guys out in the cold into the global network or global economy if you're going to get them less poor? Is there, I mean, aid is a small part of flows these days. But what should it be used for to make sure that the poor guys in the periphery of Africa can be globalized and can eventually become rich?
Who would like to start? Tausi?
Yes, maybe to react to that, what I can say that we need each other. You know, and aid, as you have said, is a small part of that. So the way forward, the way we are going, is really that the North and the South need each other to develop. And I think to take note of that, when you look at the SDG, the Sustainable Development Goals, now we have a global agenda, whereas for the MDGs, it only concentrated for the developing countries. So I think the way we are going, really we can't work on isolation. And the Agenda 2030 is really a globalized agenda, and this is the way we should do.
Charlotte?
I met with representatives from small islands, so we're not talking about Africa, but we're talking about a part of the world which is in most need, and they were asking for, could we perhaps use ODA to support the small island people in getting access to the Green Climate Fund? Could we help them to be leading the renewable energy innovation in its own part of the world through enabling access to the funds which they are very far away from? So there might be new ways of using development aid, which is about not aid to projects, but aid to be able to be part of an economy which is sustainable from the very beginning. And it's not me saying that. It's actually people who really know that neighbourhood. And I think at the same time there is a telecom market who wants volume. They want people in Africa to be able to afford. So if they are part of this Leave No One Behind SDG agenda, they might use technology to create jobs. They might. Automotive work job can perhaps be not in you know, Northern Hemisphere, but in Southern Hemisphere, but as part of Northern Hemisphere's growth as well. I don't know, but there is a lot of discussion around this.
Göran, any views on the future of ODA?
An interesting example: Tanzania, which now emphasizes industrialization, has, as a result of this, become much more protectionist and has refused to sign the economic partnership agreement with Europe, contrary to Kenya, Uganda, and Rwanda.
Elliot?
I'm struggling to avoid the consensus, so I want to be heretical. We began today by acknowledging that mutuality and global development is not the same as us developing them. And many of the issues that we're talking about are about shared development. So if we're talking about demographic imbalances, economic growth, climate change, trade, skills, these things are actually global. And that makes me wonder how far, partly it's a question of reframing the goals. So if we continue to follow a welfare model, which says we're only interested in the poorest of the poor, but maybe not in some of the other goals, that can be a problem. And the extent to which we say we can't use regard development as being also about dealing with a major global migrationary shift, which happens once every several thousand years and is happening now in our lifetime, that also ignores that shared global perspective. So I find myself wondering whether, by force of necessity, we will have to think much more radically about what we mean by development in our self-interest as well as in the interest of others.
Okay, please use the mic because this is recorded. Thanks.
I have a question about the DAC position. We all know about this 0.7 goal for total aid, but there's also a new goal about 0.2% to the least developed countries or something like this. And it's so amazing that we kind of forget this. That's even more important than the total volume is which money actually goes to the real poor countries. So my question is just a big question. So how is DAC working with this? How are you trying to push countries to actually give to the right countries?
Some good ideas,
so
Charlotte?
So experienced.
Good, yes.
After 2 weeks. I can... we just had a senior-level meeting, which is one of the few top meetings annually that takes place, which addressed this issue. That's why I could quote that it's actually decreasing instead of increasing, because it was on the agenda. It was very, very sincerely discussed in the room. Nobody disagree with we need to stick to that agreement. But in reality, there are conflicting interests. So there's a work plan. It seems to be a great work plan. My office will continue to follow up and da-da-da-da-da on that agreement. But it is also important to, I think, to realize that whilst we do that, the leave no wine behind principle, we are also in a landscape where so much else has to happen for development. So we have to be able to do both things, catalyzing other financial flows and not necessarily exclude the importance of working in middle-income countries where poverty is and inequalities are worse than before. So we need to be able to do two things and think two thoughts. But if there's anything DAC needs to do more than others, is to stick to that agreement. So my team and I will work very hard on the following up. And I'm sure it's going to be addressed in a tough way at the Global Partnership meeting in Nairobi. I'm sure. So,
please.
Thank you very much. And good luck, Charlotte. I think you have a very important agenda. I think what we can, in conclusion, I can draw from today's discussion is there is not one common agenda where we all will harmonize together. But what I think is very important, and just listening to Göran's summary here now, is that there is a lot of, we have lessons learned from 40, 50 years of development cooperation, and it is of ODA. And it's extremely important to use that and spread that knowledge also for newcomers, for new actors, for the Green Fund, for example, which will come in with new money and work very separately. But the know-how, the knowledge that we have gathered over the period, and which you, I think, all together have summarized very well, that has to be used in further work.
Maybe I can pose the question to all of the panelists. What would A look like 20 years from now? I mean, we started in the 60s. It's more or less 55 years. But 50 years from now, will we have the same system? Or what would A, if you wish, your visual thinking, what should A look like in 2050? Elliot, you have the crystal ball.
Fortunately, I won't be around then, so I can say something with complete irresponsibility. I think I'm quite interested in the whole of government perspective, and I implied it by talking about policy coherence and where aid comes from, whether aid comes from your foreign affairs ministry in a budget called aid, or whether it comes from your environment ministry, or whether it comes from your health ministry, or whether it comes from your agriculture ministry, or whether it comes from your science and research ministry, and it comes from all of those things. And if you accept that, and if you accept the whole of government perspective on most complex policy issues, then my ideal would be that we don't have an aid budget. What we have is development commitment reflected in the budgets of every ministry and overseen by a coherent cross-cutting plan. That would be my optimistic.
Do you agree, Tausi?
Yes, I agree with that. And in addition, I can say maybe 15 years to come, by then the modality of aid is going to change. But I'm sure few are still going to be there who will be in need, either within donor-giving countries or across, you know, to the recipient. And that should be addressed, especially the issue of inequality within and across countries.
Göran, what would aid look like in 15 years from now?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it will become much more demand-driven than it is today. That means there will be institutional funding mechanisms that essentially call on people who are interested in getting money to actually apply for it and account for the money that they actually get from these funds. These funds may not necessarily have interest, in the sense of forcing people to think about paying back more. But there might be a revolving fund mechanism that allows these funds to continue, so that if someone fails or someone doesn't necessarily does everything, it doesn't mean that it's the end of it, but there will be others who can come in and apply for funds. So I think the notion of an institutional funding mechanism to enhance accountability and stimulate demand is probably where we would be going.
Can I just make one quick comment?
Yes, if you go to the mic.
You set such rigorous conditions. The 2% question in the poorest countries. In my country, there is a joke that when the right-wing government is in power, they take the money away from the poor and they give it to the rich. When the left-wing government is in power, they take the money away from the poor and give it to other rich people to look after the poor. And so I'm always interested in the distributional effects of targeting the poorest countries, i.e. where the money really goes and what the effect on the Gini coefficient within that country might be. And I think that my only proviso to your strong statement is a much better monitoring of that, because my observation has been that targeting the poor often doesn't always benefit the poor, even though on paper it looks like it should.
Charlotte, before you take the floor, a few years ago I took part in the discussion and someone mentioned that if the donor community had been in, let's say, open market, you have seen a lot of mergers between SIDA, NORA, DANIDA, FINIDA, whatever you call them, because...
No, not governments.
Well, listen to this, because now we are running all, more or less all donors, even if they're Paris principles, we do a lot of myriad of things. We duplicate each other. What? Of course, it's impossible.
It's a leading question. No,
so,
we don't think
yes,
that's good.
Yes, say yes.
I asked the first question when I was new at SIDA, I asked my DFID colleague, couldn't we, you know, you do education and we do gender.
Yes.
And they just said to me, oh God, you're so naive. There will be a minister in next year who loves gender, so I need to be prepared, said the DFID guy, to deliver gender. So not a very qualitative discussion amongst donor agencies. I pushed for Save the Children and Plan International to merge, no secret. I think we can be much more demanding. And that's another meeting. It will take an hour to discuss that. I think we should. But if I may answer your question on 15 to 20 years.
Yes, yes.
It's a more perhaps a vision around what's a good implementation of the SDG agenda. I agree on the whole of government. In my view, I think the SIDA acronym stands for Development Cooperation Agency. And I hope that the word... cooperation will be the way we talk about development. It's not true today, really. So I think that what we will see is demand-driven cooperation, which means that perhaps Sweden will be asked to share its experience around how we built welfare system, rather than education, gender, health. Perhaps it could be more of a cooperation around models than just funding flows, for instance. Perhaps another thing is that aid is not used as a word, because aid is part of a broader programming where there are other financial flows where people, the private sector, wants to invest, but nobody wants to pay for the boring secretariat. We have many examples in Africa where there are private interests, but there's too little seed money to explore the idea when it's new. Sometimes aid can be part of a much broader development program. But development is the word, not aid. It's just part of a bigger portfolio, and I think that's going to happen much more. I think it's, in my vision, it's much more interdependent. So the agenda is not about us helping others, but it's more about, upplyst egen nytta, self-interest, but for good, for the common good, so to say. Lastly, I do think that we should not underestimate that people want to help each other. There is a lot of push for new organisations. my name is Charlotte Pietri, I want to open up my own NGO. There's a lot of push because I want to be remembered as somebody who did something, or I feel good about helping others. We cannot control that. That's perhaps not a governmental money, but I think that the psychology between who's actually needing who in this, there's a lot of push for people who want to help because they feel good about helping, and not necessarily because they are part of an overall effort where demand is really the drive behind. And I think that's also a part of aid, the aid industry, that we perhaps need to look into.
Thanks a lot. We are coming to an end of this session. Soon I will give the floor to Gun-Britt Andersson, who is the vice chair of EBA, but just some few takeaways from this session. Ownership is a means to an end. Governance matter when it comes to institutional capacity building. We discussed form or function, what matter most. I think that is a continuing discussion to be had. Donors spent quite some time to in-house communication. That has to be changed in the future. Adaptive learning, harmonization, accountability, all those aspects of Paris Declaration, of course, was discussed also about the broader donor community, whether we should get back, whether. I think we agree that we should get back to the basics. ODA should get back to the basics, to the poorest of the poor, and how to do that. Is Paris or Busan out of fashion? That remains to be seen. I think there is a Nairobi meeting coming up on that. And finally, ODA is in the eye of the storm. You told us. So let's please come back to Stockholm and tell us what happened when the storm is over, the hurricane is over. So join me in a big hand for this panel. So now, Gun-Britt, please. What have we discussed today from early morning until 4:30? Please.
Thank you. I'm not going to summarize. but I'm going to thank you for participating. And I also will start with, I saw Elliot Stern last night, and we went back from a dinner to this part of Stockholm. And he said, this is a strange, I don't know what this conference will be about, because it's not sort of very clear objective. What do you want to achieve out of this conference? It was sort of different studies and with no clear agenda and with no clear principle of what we would like to conclude on what we would like to get at. That is your normal thing when you go to DAC or OECD. There are papers prepared on the same theme, and you actually deduct from the beginning what do the organizers want to achieve. You couldn't do that here. But I think what the EBA studies today and your contribution today have made is actually they have helped us to put the fundamental questions about aid and development cooperation very clearly on the agenda. They are on the agenda. They are at the back of our head right now, because it's we have been in this for a long time. Maybe we should have had more time to go through the studies and discuss them more carefully and in detail. I regretted myself that we didn't have time to discuss the Tanzania study. It is very close to my heart, because I was there when it was very, very, very difficult to be there and at the worst moments of Tanzania. But still, there were good experiences out of that, and I'm very happy that you were here today to convey some of that. What is aid about? I sat with some other old people, and they're saying, poverty reduction. Of course, that has been the ultimate. To raise the living level of poor people, that was how it was expressed from the beginning in the Swedish aid Bible, the document that came in 1962. But over the years, the actual content has been broader. It has been nation building. It has been it has been liberation movements. It has been training, education, and so on. Of course, the ultimate aim always to raise the level of living for people and inclusive for everybody. Now we talk as though if we should always reach the poorest and not. Almost sometimes we are accused of not doing it directly. We are not even content if we do it indirectly. And you said here that you go back to basic. We have an EBA study about the basic, the roots of Swedish development cooperation. It will come within a few months or weeks. And that shows that ODA was part of whole of government need to restore the economy of the United States and the warring after the Second World War. And so it was a lot of indirect means, but that was the heydays of ODA, and that is how we model it also for the poorer countries. Maybe we are back into a situation where we need to go back to basics. That ODA is, in fact, one of the things that we can use in this world to help create a better world, because now we are in real need again. To do things together, as you said. We need one another and we need to go together. And then maybe we have to analyze again where ODA is most important, and I hope that is what DAC will do. So we will continue with these studies, and I'm sure that the studies that we have now published will be very much criticized by a lot of interest groups who feel hurt with what has been said in some of them. We already had one of those who love to hate Tanzania has already been out with an article on how everything has been condemned. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think it's the time when we get serious discussions about fundamentals. And I'm very happy with the concluding remarks that Göran Hayden had here about how we should move forward. And up to what will happen 15 years from now. Yeah, first of all, I hope that many of the countries, low and middle income countries, they are doing fairly well. And if they manage to continue to do fairly well and have reasonable government, not perfect government, but reasonable government, maybe they can fund a lot of the things they want to do themselves, as Tanzania is now funding much more than they have been doing. And we can concentrate resources on getting those on board that are now in the so-called we call them fragile states and conflict and mess. And in the meantime, we should take care that we administer our intervention and development cooperation so we don't create more chaos by actually denying all the authority to their authorities. In all states, I think they need institutions, and we have to be very carefully with how we work with institutions in countries like Uganda, in Rwanda, in Tanzania, and so on. We can be critical, but they need their institutions too. And if we want to mend some of the fragile states, I think we also have to... We are talking about that, how to do that. So we have a... And I think this day, these studies, they have put these things on the agenda. And there, I think, the regional organizations in Africa can play a role. Of course, they have a lot of dysfunctions and inefficiencies and all that, but they can also help spread role models. And as you have seen in the conflict area, they can also take some of their neighbors to task if they do not behave well. So I think these things that we are building are very, very important. So we'll continue to put out controversial studies and hope that you will continue to come to our seminars and help us to improve whatever we do. And for doing that, we need good reference group, we need good authors, we need good ideas of what to study. Thank you very much.